Attention listeners, AfterSight's annual hike is coming up on July 27th.
It was a really good experience for me.
Visit aftersight.org/hike and become an audio trekker today.
That hike today gave me so much courage.
Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Loveland Reporter Herald, read by Catherine Villa. This is being recorded on April 20th. Today, we will be reading the following main articles. Columbine, 25 years later. We take care of each other. Written by Jessica Seaman. Polis signs eviction protections into law. Written by Seth Clayman. Ukraine and Israel aid advances in rare House vote. Written by Stephen Groves, Lisa Mascaro, and Kevin Freakin. And following up with miscellaneous articles. Columbine, 25 years later. We take care of each other. By Jessica Seaman. 25 years ago, Michelle DiManna sat in the math office at Columbine High School grading papers and talking to a colleague when she heard students screaming in terror. Two heavily armed shooters had entered the Jefferson County School late in the morning on April 20, 1999, and proceeded to kill 12 of their classmates and a teacher, injuring dozens more in a tragedy that shocked the nation. The shooting, which ended with the two killers taking their own lives, reshaped school security across the United States and served as a precursor to the litany of mass killings that have taken place across the country in the decades since, so much so that the school's very name, Columbine, remains synonymous with school shootings. But what happened next, after DiManna fled the building with her colleagues and pupils, is also part of Columbine's legacy, the one that, 25 years later, both current and former employees talk about the most, the resilience and hope that persists in a community marked by one of the deadliest school shootings in American history. Quote, "We take care of each other," end quote, DiManna, who still teaches math at the high school, said in a recent interview. Quote, "You don't really leave your family after trauma, and that is what Columbine is," end quote. And that's why the 53-year-old, who will retire at the end of this academic year, has spent her entire career at Columbine, despite such tragedy. DiManna is one of 15 current Columbine staff members who were either employees or students at the time of the shooting. As Jeffco Public Schools marked the shooting's 25th anniversary, officials held a media day with Columbine and district staff earlier this month to talk about the changes to school security that occurred nationwide in the wake of the shooting, such as lockdown drills and the creation of Safe to Tell, Colorado's statewide anonymous reporting system for students. Much has changed in 25 years. Those who were students at the time of the shooting have become parents, and the pupils that now sit in the high school's classrooms are too young to remember the tragedy, having not been born until years later. One thing that hasn't changed, though, is that at 11:20 a.m. each April 20th, around the time the shooting began, former principal Frank DeAngelis gathers at the school with families and staff to read the names of the 12 students and one teacher who died that day: Cassie Bernal, Stephen Robert Kernow, Corey DePooter, Kelly Fleming, Matt Ketcher, Daniel Mauser, Danny Rohrbaugh, Dave Sanders, Rachel Scott, Isaiah Scholes, John Tomlin, Lauren Townsend, and Kyle Velasquez. Quote, "Columbine represents a time to remember," end quote, said DeAngelis, who served as principal for almost two decades and made it his mission to rebuild the school after the shooting and to help his students through the trauma. DeAngelis retired in 2014, 2 years after he fulfilled a promise he made after the attack to remain as principal until all of the students in Columbine feeder schools at the time of the shooting had graduated. Quote, "Columbine also represents hope. Columbine is strong," end quote, he said. The day has also become an annual day of service where students and staff give back to the community through volunteer projects. Quote, "The community came together and made it stronger," end quote, said current principal Scott Christie, adding, quote, "I hope Columbine is a place of hope for those who have experienced tragedy," end quote. On the day of the shooting, DiMano was a 28-year-old in her fifth year of teaching at Columbine, a school she also graduated from in 1989. For DiMano, the moments after she heard screaming followed like this. A teacher pulled a fire alarm to evacuate the building. Her sister, Kim, who was a senior, found her and DiMano told her to leave, but she did not do so herself until after helping evacuate the math department's classrooms. DiMano found her sister again outside where they saw an injured student near a stoplight before going into a house across the street, which is where she called her husband. Residents opening their doors to students and staff fleeing the shooting isn't the only thing that DiMano remembers. She also recalls youth ministries helping care for students in the days that followed, no matter whether they were members of their churches or not. Quote, "I don't know how many communities could take care of kids as ours did," end quote, she said. At the time, the shooting at Columbine was the deadliest at a K-12 school in U.S. history. There hadn't been massacres at schools in Newtown, Connecticut, Parkland, Florida, or Uvalde, Texas. In other words, there weren't many people who knew what the survivors of the school shooting experienced and how it would affect them in the years that followed. They couldn't understand how, for Columbine survivors, routine fire drills can be a trigger, how lockdown drills can create a panic, or how each year when April rolls around, so too comes anxiety about what might happen, DiMano said. That's also why DiMano stayed at Columbine. The support that the community provides didn't end 25 years ago, she said. Christie, the school's principal, checks on the staff members who were at Columbine in 1999 each time there's another school shooting or something else happens that could upset them, DiMano said. Quote, "We just pick each other up. You always know if you were having one of those days or something happened, you had someone to talk to," end quote, she said. The reason DiMano returned to Columbine after the shooting is also simple. Quote, "I wanted to teach," end quote, she said. Polis signs eviction protections into law. Supporters organized for months to pass bill. By Seth Klayman. Governor Jared Polis signed for-cause eviction protections into law Friday, making Colorado the sixth U.S. state to enact the policy that's aimed at blunting displacement of vulnerable tenants. The law, passed by the legislature late last month, effectively gives tenants a right of first refusal to renew their leases. That protection, supporters say, will insulate renters from discriminatory or retaliatory non-renewals from landlords, who may want to rid themselves of a tenant who complained about an apartment's condition. Quote, "This is the right thing to do," end quote, said Democratic Representative Javier Mabray, who sponsored the bill this year with the House Majority Leader Monica Duran and Democratic Senators Julie Gonzalez and Nick Henriksen. Quote, "In working on this legislation, we heard from families who have seen firsthand the lack of basic protections can have on families who are removed based on the color of their skin or because they've made valid complaints about problems in their homes," end quote. What does the law do? Broadly, the new law gives tenants a right of first refusal on whether to renew their lease or not. State law already requires cause, like failure to pay rent, before a tenant can be evicted during their lease. This new law covers the expiration of that lease and who gets to decide whether to renew it. Why is the new law important? The law is among the most significant tenant protections passed in Colorado in recent memory, as lawmakers seek solutions to the state's housing crisis and the tens of thousands of evictions it causes every year. While Polis has pursued land use reforms that seek to spur denser development, progressive lawmakers have sought more immediate protections to reduce evictions and displacements. The for-cause evictions bill represented the most prominent policy within that approach, which also included efforts to improve the safety of housing, improve tenants' access to eviction proceedings, and regulate the contents and requirements of lease agreements. Like Polis's land use measures, the for-cause bill's passage has been a months-long fight. How did the bill get to Polis's desk? Last year, a similar but more sweeping version of the bill, also backed by Mabray and Gonzalez, cleared the House but stalled in the Senate amid opposition from moderate Democrats. That attempt died a procedural death on the penultimate day of the 2023 legislative session, as Mabray and other supporters watched on from the Senate lobby. Its death sparked criticism from progressive legislators and advocates that state leaders hadn't prioritized renters or done enough to protect them. How did legislators change their approach? This year, lawmakers brought a more narrowly tailored version of the policy, removing more controversial elements like a requirement that landlords pay tenants relocation costs in some circumstances. Duran, the number two Democrat in the House, joined as a co-sponsor, and House Speaker Julie McCluskey declared that the policy was a priority of the chamber during her opening day remarks in January. Still, supporters had to fend off opposition from landlord groups and legislative Republicans, as well as a late attempt by some Senate Democrats to hijack the bill. Quote, "We did everything we possibly could to make sure we could get this to the finish line, so that our members and our working families and our renters, who are from minority groups, who are impacted by the evictions and displacements, could have these protections," end quote. Cecilia Guadarrama Trejo, the co-chair of Colorado Homes for All, the coalition backing the bill, said after the vote. What's this law supposed to stop? Proponents' goal is to reduce displacement of renters. The right of first refusal offered by the for-cause protections is important, those supporters argue, because landlords can use expiring leases to displace tenants for a variety of nefarious reasons, like for discriminatory purposes or if a tenant has complained about an apartment's condition. Mabray, an eviction defense attorney, has said he represented a tenant who faced explicit racial discrimination and was displaced by her landlord. A non-renewal then requires tenants to pay the upfront costs of relocating, like deposits, application fees, or moving costs. Meanwhile, landlords and property owners who've opposed the bill have argued that an expiring lease lets them move on from problem tenants they can't otherwise evict. Are there exemptions? Yep, the law gives property owners and landlords various reasons to pull the plug on a lease renewal. Those exemptions include if the property owner is planning to demolish or substantially renovate the unit, if they or a family member want to move into the unit themselves, or if they intend to take it off the long-term rental market. Other exemptions include the tenant refusing to sign a new lease, or if the tenant has a history of not paying in the past. The bill does not prevent property owners from increasing rent to retaliate against a tenant or otherwise get around the law's protections. Ukraine and Israel aid advances in rare House vote by Stephen Groves, Lisa Mascaro, and Kevin Freakin. Washington. With rare bipartisan momentum, the House pushed ahead Friday on a foreign aid package of $95 billion for Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and humanitarian support as a robust coalition of lawmakers helped it clear a procedural hurdle to reach final votes this weekend. Friday's vote produced a seldom-seen outcome in the typically hyper-partisan House, with Democrats helping Republican Speaker Mike Johnson's plan advance overwhelmingly, 316-94. Final House approval could come this weekend when the package would be sent to the Senate. It was a victory for the strategy Johnson set in motion this week after he agonized for 2 months over the legislation. Still, Johnson has had to spend the past 24 hours making the rounds on conservative media working to salvage support for the wartime funding, particularly for Ukraine as it faces a critical moment battling Russia, but also for his own job as the effort to remove him as Speaker grew. Quote, "Ukrainians desperately need lethal aid right now. We cannot allow Vladimir Putin to roll through another country and take it," end quote, Johnson told the conservative host of the Mark Levin Show about the Russian president's invasion of Ukraine. Quote, "These are very serious matters with global implications," end quote. Johnson said after the vote that while it wasn't perfect legislation, it was, quote, "the best possible product," end quote, Republicans can get given their thin majority in one chamber of Congress. After months of delay, the House worked slowly but deliberately once Johnson made up his mind this week to plow ahead with a package that matches, with a few alterations, what the Senate passed in February. President Joe Biden sent a swift endorsement of the Speaker's plan, and, in a rare moment, Donald Trump, the Republican presumed presidential nominee who opposes most overseas aid for Ukraine, has not derailed the Speaker's work. Quote, "The world is watching what the Congress does," end quote, the White House said in a statement. Quote, "Passing this legislation would send a powerful message about the strength of American leadership at a pivotal moment," end quote. In an extremely rare step, the members of the House Rules Committee joined forces late Thursday in a near-midnight vote, and the four Democrats giving their support on a procedural step to push past the Republican majority's three hardline holdouts to send the package to the House floor for a debate on a 9-3 vote. It was a moment unseen in recent House memory. Democratic leader Representative Hakeem Jeffries said that he spoke with Johnson on Thursday night to ensure the bill would clear the Rules Committee. Quote, "It's long past time that we support our Democratic allies," end quote, Jeffries said after the vote. Quote, "House Democrats have once again cleared the way for legislation that's important to the American people," end quote. Johnson will need to rely on Democrats again Saturday to turn back amendments Republicans have offered that could kill the package. One from hardline Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene would reduce spending for Ukraine to zero. Greene has filed a motion to vacate the Speaker from office, and it drew another supporter Friday as Representative Paul Gosar, an Arizona Republican, co-sponsored the motion. Representative Thomas Massey of Kentucky and other co-sponsors suggested that before the House breaks next week, others could follow, building pressure on Johnson to step down. Representative Eli Crane, a hardline conservative from Arizona, also said he was open to joining the move to oust Johnson. Quote, "I definitely sense there's a souring to Republican leadership," end quote, he said. Green could launch a bid to evict Johnson from the Speaker's office, should she call it up for a vote, much the way Republicans booted Kevin McCarthy from the position last fall. Jeffries, the Democratic leader, remained noncommittal to helping Johnson keep the Speaker's gavel, though some Democrats have suggested that they would be inclined to help defeat the motion to vacate through procedural maneuvers. With one of the most narrow House majorities in modern times, Johnson can only afford to lose a single vote or two from his Republican ranks to pass any bill. That dynamic has thrust him into the arms of Democrats as he searches for votes to pass the package. Without his Republican majority fully behind him, Johnson could not shape the package as the ultra-conservatives demand lest he lose Democratic backing. It forced him to leave behind tough security measures to clamp down on migration at the U.S.-Mexico border. At best, Johnson has been able to carve up a Senate-passed version of the bill into separate parts, as is the preference among House Republicans, and the final votes will be on distinct measures for Ukraine, Israel, and Indo-Pacific allies. The package would also include a fourth provision that includes many Republican priorities that Democrats endorse, or at least are willing to accept. Those include proposals that allow the U.S. to seize frozen Russian central bank assets to rebuild Ukraine, impose sanctions on Iran, Russia, China, and criminal organizations that traffic fentanyl, and potentially ban the video app TikTok if its China-based owner doesn't sell its stake within a year. Representative Gregory Meeks, the top Democrat on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, said the vote showed, quote, "The world that Democrats understand the world and our allies, that we're going to stand by them and make sure that we give them the support and the aid that they need, that we care about humanitarian concerns," end quote. He added that in his 26 years in the House, he had never seen one party have to help the other like Democrats did this week. Quote, "It just shows how the Republicans cannot manage the House and the House floor to get things done," end quote, Meeks said. Republicans, even those who supported the process, were severely disappointed that it had come to this. Quote, "I'm concerned," end quote, said Representative Ryan Zinke, a Republican from Montana who voted for the procedural step but was nevertheless displeased with the process. Quote, "This is reflective of the controversy in the country. How much aid?" End quote. Passing each bill in votes expected Saturday will require Johnson to form complicated bipartisan coalitions on each, with Democrats, for example, ensuring Ukraine aid is approved, but some left-leaning progressives refuse to back military aid for Israel over the destruction of Gaza. Still, Jeffries said that a majority of Democrats would vote Saturday for the packages of aid for Ukraine, Israel, and allies in Asia. The components would then be automatically stitched back together into a single package sent to the Senate, where hardliners there are also planning procedural moves to stall the final approval. 3D Printing Festival returning to the ranch this weekend. By Austin Flesks. After a massively successful event last year, the Rocky Mountain RepRap Festival will be returning to the ranch Saturday and Sunday with hundreds of 3D printing vendors and makers alongside returning events. Quote, "I think this year is going to blow some people's minds on what is there," end quote, said Justin Teitelbaum, one of the event's organizers. Teitelbaum said during the event's inaugural year last April, he and fellow organizers Mike Medhurst and Zach Reuter expected around 1,300 people, knowing that similar events across the country tended to draw in around 1,800 to 2,500 attendees. By the end of the weekend, the Rocky Mountain RepRap Festival saw more than 3,100 people, not including its makers and vendors. Quote, "It was beyond anything we imagined when we started this," end quote, Teitelbaum said, adding that they ran out of attendee lanyards a few hours into the first day, but this year they ordered a few more, end quote. Teitelbaum said this year the event will feature around 60 vendors and 70 makers from across the world, ranging from larger companies and massive prints to smaller creators, all coming with a passion for the field. Friday afternoon, many vendors and makers piled into the First National Bank Exhibition Hall, setting up booths and tables ahead of the first day of the event. Mitch Davis, co-founder of Polar Filament from Michigan, said the company's team came last year, unsure how the event was going to be, but was amazed at how big it turned out to be. "Getting to meet the faces behind businesses and the many online creators who inspire others." Quote, "You come here and every table is those people. It's really surreal to see that. It's cool to see the people behind it," end quote, he said. Davis added that along with the many products brought to the event are an equal number of cool stories from those who came. Shane LaHaye with Prusa Research, a 3D printer manufacturer from Prague, said he loves coming to events like these and meeting with other people excited about the field, the customers who buy Prusa products, and the fellow makers and vendors. Quote, "It's going to be a good time," end quote, he said. Along with the many booths and tables, the weekend event will feature a series of speakers and presenters, as well as returning events like the Death Racers and Dragster competitions, pitting 3D printed vehicles in a test of speed. Tattlebaum said the event is a great way to bring a community of like-minded creators and enthusiasts together to see what 3D printing has to offer and to educate those with a budding interest. He said the event is so important for all involved because they simply love it. Quote, "We wouldn't be doing it if we didn't love it. I don't think there is a company or maker that is coming that wouldn't be there if they didn't want to be," end quote, he said. The free event will be held at the First National Bank Exhibition Hall at the Ranch, 5280 Arena Circle, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday and 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday. More information is at Rocky Mountain Rep Rap Festival.com. While the event is free, interested attendees can register for tickets at bit.ly/4455KB0. Tattlebaum said parking will also be complimentary for the event. Those parking in the ranch lot should scan a QR code found around the parking lot and enter their license plate number. Today's obituaries: Janet Boland, Thomas Benesch, Jeffrey Reitz. Thank you for joining us for the Loveland Reporter Herald, read by Catherine Villa.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.